Welcome to Pediatric Insight, where we have candid conversations with members of the Child Health Advisory Council and some of the nation's top academic child health leaders. I am Wesley Milliken, CEO of Career Physician, and your host. Each conversation addresses a leadership challenge or opportunity that's top of mind for today's pediatric leaders. The council breaks it down based on the wisdom and experience obtained throughout their distinguished careers. And now, I'm honored to turn it over to the moderator in today's conversation.
Thank you for joining us for the latest Pediatric Insight brought to you by the Child Health Advisory Council and Career Physician. My name is Bruce Rubin, and the members of our council in attendance today include Craig Hillmeyer, Valerie Opapari, Robert Sowen, Arnie Strauss, and our leader, Bruder Stapleton, as well as members from Career Physician, including Wesley Milliken, John Hayes, and Mark Lozano. Today, we're going to be discussing social programming for candidates. And to begin, when we talk about social programming, I usually think of this in two ways. First, the meals, often the dinners, but also the breakfast and lunch that may be organized with a candidate, but also social programs for their families. I'd like to begin by turning to Craig and Bob with the questions regarding the meals, the dinners. How do you decide who attends these dinners, including the chair or members of the committee? How large should this be? And are there any limitations to the dinners that need to be discussed in advance? And why don't we begin with Craig?
Thank you, Bruce. I think that it's really important to understand that the dinner is actually part of the recruiting process, and you really need to have that conversation with the people who are going to be part of the search committee and people who are going to be invited to the dinner, that this is actually an evaluative process and that there's helpful information that can come from these social interactions. In terms of who should be invited to the dinner, clearly there needs to be members of the search committee and probably the head of the search committee as part of the dinner, but there should also be some individuals that are going to be working with the candidate so that they can get a better understanding of what goes on. And I actually find that these dinners are very important. We've actually had candidates who we've decided not to hire based on the interactions during the dinner. It's really important to understand how people interact with other people. Food has a very trusting type. It tends to promote a very trusting type environment when people are eating. And it's really important to see how people interact during that particular context. So I do think that to a certain extent, the actual list depends a little bit upon the position and, you know, that you're hiring too, but you need to make sure that the search committee is well represented in that process.
Regarding the size of the group and preparation for the meal, I think when you get beyond six or maybe eight people, it can become pretty awkward, and worse, it can kind of devolve into, you know, three or four separate conversations that might even exclude the candidate on occasion and make them feel kind of awkward. So I'm an advocate for smaller meal sessions. And I really think the question you asked about preparation is really important, because sometimes the people who are invited to attend just feel like it's a night out on the department, you know, and they forget that, as you said, that it's part of the evaluative process. And I've been to some meals where the candidate ends up talking to just one or two people and others feel completely excluded. So whoever's at that meal, either representing the department or the search committee, needs to be pretty facile at trying to get people engaged and make sure that the candidate feels like they're participating and not just observing, or alternatively, that they're on the hot seat the entire time. You really want to try to find somebody who can marry that those different attitudes.
Those are outstanding points. Those attending this also need to be aware that it's a great opportunity for the candidate to evaluate the department, to see collegiality, to learn things about the city and about the department. And it's really an opportunity to put your best foot forward. The other thing goes without saying is that you need to prepare if the candidate has any food intolerance or preferences. just asking that question can make a difference. So Bruder?
I'd like to reemphasize what Bob says about size. It really is disappointing to a candidate if there are multiple conversations with lots of people. And sometimes I know early in my career, when divisions were recruiting someone, they saw the dinner as kind of a social event for the division rather than an event to help the candidate prepare. And again, I think as Bruce just mentioned, the people who attend the dinner should have all the information about the candidate. It shouldn't be just a cold come to dinner with somebody and to have an understanding of why the person's being recruited and what the person's background is, and so that there can be a good conversation. When couples come, trying to understand if you can in advance what the partner or spouse's interests are, whether it's business, or to have other couples that might have similar backgrounds that can help the candidate understand what the culture and what the opportunities are in the community.
Thank you. I see Valerie has her hand up.
I was just going to mention that one of the things that I always did when I went to recruitment dinners is to really pay attention to how our individuals ask questions, interact with the candidate. There is nothing worse than having a recruitment dinner and there's an individual from your organization that spends the entire dinner talking about themselves and where they're going on vacation and what they did here and what they did there, and usurping the entire time frame. And so one of the things I used those dinners for was to really see, which of the faculty are really excellent at interviewing candidates, and take the time and the effort to really thoughtfully pose questions in this comfortable, safe kind of environment. Because I saw firsthand several very, very bad examples of losing candidates just because the dinner was so uncomfortable, not just for the candidate, but all the other people that were invited because of one person from your organization essentially destroying the evening. So I would just throw that out as another thing that you can learn from these candidate dinners.
And although far be it for me to suggest that a chair would destroy an evening, we do have the candidates that feel if the chair is present at the dinner, that the discussion should be centered around her and her questions and needs. So it's a balance, Valerie, is to making sure that you're there and can help to manage the conversation without dominating in spite of the candidates perhaps interest in doing that.
I just want to mention the pre-visit preparation is important. The interaction during the meal is important, but the post-evaluation is also crucial. Many times the search committee does not even ask those presents for their evaluation of the candidate. And I think that's really important. I use an analogy to residency recruitment. So in our experience, the people who go to meals with the residency candidates would often know much better about their social skills and either be dramatically in favor or dramatically opposed to certain candidates. And I think that just means it's crucial to use the entire group to evaluate the candidates.
Outstanding point for follow-up. And Wesley, you had something to say?
Just to really stress the need for strategic thinking as it relates to these dinners and really leave nothing to chance, right? Identify who's going to host the dinner, maybe even have some suggestions for what a host's responsibilities are at a dinner. I think much like we would recommend you on any itinerary that goes out for a candidate, I think it's really smart to talk about, the strategy with the candidate, to talk about the challenges that the division or the program, the strengths, all of that, so that it's a last opportunity to align your faculty and align your organization before they interface with a candidate. I think that's super important. I think the other thing I would say is you just want to always be thinking about the spouse. If a spouse is involved, whatever you do, you cannot allow your process to in any way communicate that somebody is a trailing spouse. I mean, those two words are not well received by anybody. And so I think going out of your way to make the spouse feel like a priority to the organization is only going to help you in the long run. And you can accomplish a lot of that with dinner based on who you invite and how you arrange that.
Outstanding points. It goes to understand what is of importance for the family. And if there are certain groups or people or that they would care to meet at dinner, that would be an opportunity, which is actually a great segue into the second part of this. The social programs include far more than meals. It includes ways to engage the family, whether it's a school visit for children that are going to be moving to a new school. We found that to be particularly important for some kids that are transitioning to IB programs, International Baccalaureate programs, for example, meeting with members of religious organizations, if that's important. And I'd like to actually kick this off. Bruder has a wonderful story that he told me about paying attention to this and how it has could make a difference. So Bruder, I'd love to hear this story as a kickoff.
Yeah, well, these are wonderful points, and the family is critical. Well, we had a candidate that I was really hopeful would be interested in our program, brought a lot of skills and backgrounds that would have been very helpful. And he wanted to bring his family to Seattle. And we said, great, we would help work with that. But he said, no, I'll handle it. So he picked a hotel that was not very propitious in a location that was difficult to get around. It rained all weekend. His kids were kind of holed up in the hotel. And then on Monday morning, because he wanted to arrange it, he hired a cab, and the cab came across Aurora Bridge. And as they were going over the bridge after a rainy weekend, the cab driver told him, yeah, this is the bridge where they have the most suicides because people jump off the bridge because of the rain here. Surprise, he was not interested in our position. So I have a personal situation like that. When I was first starting to look for a faculty job as a pediatric nephrologist, it was in California, and the realtor showed us around to homes in Santa Monica, which when I was so far out of the possibility, we decided we couldn't possibly live there because it was, you know, the understanding, you know, having the realtors understand that show people around, you know, what's possible for people is so critical, because it was really discouraging to us to say, well, gosh, you know, maybe I can't even go into academics if I've got to live in a garage so with my kids. So those are some things. But that one story in Seattle made it really realize how important it was to manage the entire visit so that people, you know, they get you want them to have an honest view of the, I mean, it rains in Seattle and snows in Buffalo, you know, I mean, that's part of the joy of being there. You don't want people to talk about how people commit suicide all the time because it's hard to live here.
Well, before I transition to Valerie, I have a much happier anecdote. In recruiting a rheumatologist, happened to ask her if there were anything specific that they were interested in, that her or spouse was interested in. And she said, well, he is just mad about bass fishing. This is what he does. And I said, oh my God, I don't know anything about bass fishing. So send out a blast message, any bass fishermen here. And in fact, we had several of them, including the president of the Bass Fishermen's Club in Richmond, was one of our respiratory therapists who was super keen to meet the guy. We ended up not recruiting her, but they've been back for vacation so that he could go bass fishing with his new friends. So these things. So how do we determine what are the things that are important to them in a way that we can ask the questions? And how do we go about setting up an inclusive social program? So Valerie, do you have some thoughts along those lines?
I don't want to repeat much of what's already been said because there have been so many great points, but I want to add two words to this kind of preparation and organization. And the two words I would add are you know, really important good listening skills and flexibility. So I recall, since you want some anecdotes, I recall a search that we thought we had prepared extraordinarily well for and crossed every T, had everybody prepared, great social events, everything seemed to be going well, great dinners, I mean, this was just, I thought we hit it out of the park. And on the last day, when I was basically about to present the offer letter, I heard it had been amazing. It was my job of my life. And I can't tell you how excited my wife is with the opportunities you found for her. And, but I'm not coming. One of my kids is a star swimmer. And we just looked at everything and decided that there's no way they could leave the state they're in because this, my daughter has a chance for, you know, hitting some very high bars and swimming. And I was like devastated. I thought we'd covered every base. I thought I knew everything I needed to know. How is it this came up at the last minute? But I decided that, you know, we had to figure out like what's a swimming scenario here in Ann Arbor. And with a few phone calls and a lot of work and talking to the coach of the swim team, it turned out that we actually had a better program. So we brought the candidate back and we said, look, you know, we're bringing your daughter back because you already think you like this, but we're having a whole visit that's just for your daughter to figure out what the swim system here is in Ann Arbor. And needless to say that Arnie knows a little bit about this recruitment. It went extraordinarily well. And most importantly for the daughter, there was nothing that brought me more joy than 6 years into the time when the candidate was on campus to hear that it was the best move they'd ever made for their daughter. And so, you know, I think listening and preparing and organizing, but at the last minute, if you didn't cross all your, you know, T's and dot all your I's, be flexible and really think out of the box, because oftentimes when you think you've been derailed, you know, sometimes you haven't. It's just that there's a little bit more homework you have to do. So any rate, that would be my anecdote.
Love it. Wesley, you had your hand up, and then Arnie, I believe.
Just a couple process suggestions to anybody listening to this call. Anybody you choose to allow into your search process, you just need to really be strategic about their involvement. For example, you know, all of the realtors that are involved in search processes all over the country, right? I think they could be spouses of faculty. They could be, you know, all the different connections that realtors have to your process. But we had a form we used when I was at Oklahoma, and even today suggest it to our clients, but, you know, that the realtors can actually fill out and send back to the chair or to us based on their conversations with candidates so that we can get it. Cause everybody gets a different sense, right, of what, where the candidate is, where their family is. And some of that can be really valuable. So I think, no matter who you allow into your process, I think having some way to capture the wisdom they're gaining in parallel to your staff is going to really help you to get to the finish line, I think, in a lot of cases. And lastly, if you're engaging with a candidate, but they're reluctant to let you engage with their spouse, I mean, it's really rare that that's not a negative. I know it's hard to say because we all think we can convince anybody, but it's just something to be leery of and to really dig into a bit if that occurs. So, Arnie?
Yeah, I would just mention the question of how to acquire this sort of more personal information about family members and about interests of the candidate in a way that's both that's acceptable to them. I don't care what HR thinks personally when I do a search, but I do care what the faculty and their family think. So how do you do that? And of course, it is about listening, as Valerie has mentioned, but it's also about paying attention, as was just mentioned, to all the people that interact with the candidate before the visit, especially, but also during the visit. So frequently, you know, somebody's driving the spouse around and they drop a mention of some critical thing like the swim team or the tennis environment that's really, really important to the family. And that asking people to make sure they communicate that back to you is really important. And then listening to them and as Valerie said, moving quickly to adapt to that situation is really crucial. So listening and involving everybody has been mentioned.
Craig, I think you have some comments.
Yeah, I think that at trying to determine what's really important to make sure that you've covered all the bases in the recruitment it's really important to ask the candidate and to be just very clear up front. What is important to you? Are there things that are going to be in the way of making this a successful recruitment? The other thing that I've sometimes found helpful actually is as you check references on a candidate, which I would never hire anyone that I hadn't checked references on, you want to make sure that you ask those references. What would be important in recruiting this candidate? Because oftentimes they have a perspective on the candidate that the candidate themselves don't even really understand is important. So any way that you can get at what is really important to make this work for the candidate is going to be a fair game. And I would just exercise all those options.
Outstanding points all. Are there any other comments or anecdotes that would be of value? Yes, Wesley.
Related but separate issue, Bruce. I think chairs are very busy. A lot of the people looking at this video will be chairs, but you know, one of the main reasons we replace leaders is their inability to recruit talent. And so to me, I think the missed opportunity in many departments around the country is utilizing recruiting as a way to teach your future stars, you know, how to recruit talent. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the chair that's doing a lot of this, but there may be some superstar young faculty that you could give some leadership responsibility to engage with candidates, to talk about the department, to think about visits and really guide the team. But historically, we've seen some mutual benefit to both candidate and the leadership development efforts of a department as it relates to that.
Well, with that, I thank you all for really an outstanding and in some cases, an amusing conversation. If you'd like to see other topics that we've talked about, please visit the website careerphysician.com and click on Pediatric Insight. Thank you all again.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. If you have a question for our council or have a future topic suggestion, please connect with us at pediatricinsight.com. The Child Health Advisory Council is comprised of a diverse group of emeritus deans, department chairs, division chiefs, and child health executives recognized for their leadership contributions in academic pediatrics and child health. The CHAC's impact is further bolstered by council specialty advisors who are active current national leaders in each of the subspecialties in pediatrics. Collectively, the 30 plus members of the CHAC bring unmatched wisdom and experience to career physicians' executive search and leadership development endeavors or its clients. Our council members include the following physicians: Bruder Stapleton, Christine Gleason, Craig Hillemeyer, Renee Jenkins, Danielle LaRocque Arena, Valerie Opapari, Bruce Rubin, Robert Sawin, and Arnold Strauss. To view our council members' bios, please visit careerphysician.com and click on the Child Health Advisory Leadership tab.